Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And welcome to the Bob Siegel Show, and this is Mark Boobian actually filling in for Bob, who is probably at Disneyland, or thereabouts, I would guess, because that's where he usually is when I fill in, and I'm sure he's having a good time wherever he is. So, I usually come on and talk about movies, going to do something a little bit different today, but first, a word about Comic-Con, because you know it's that time of year again, and just a little over a week away, Comic-Con is coming up. And once again, Comic-Con finds a way to mess up the poor kids. You know, the kids, they talk about the kids being the future and all that. But Comic-Con doesn't act like that because they always somehow screw up the My Little Pony panel. And I mean it. Last year, it was having Hand of God before My Little Pony. R-rated, maybe NC-17 rated show before kids show. And to be honest, 90% of the people were in that hall to see the kids show panel during Hand of God. Well, this year, they put Steven Universe in the hotel, one of the hotel halls, a big hall, and at the opposite end of the convention center, they put My Little Pony. Everybody that likes My Little Pony wants to see the Steven Universe panel at the same time. I mean, come on. This is just so sad and frustrating. So hopefully someone out there is listening that knows someone at Comic-Con that can change things around. Put My Little Pony with another kids show, not at the same time, but and have them all run together so that the kids can just sit down and watch all those panels. And I can do that, too. I'm not just thinking about the kids. I am being a little selfish because I do want to see the Steven Universe panel and the My Little Pony panel. And if you haven't seen the My Little Pony panel, it's actually awesome. They have the makers of the show, the creators, the writers, and the whole voice cast, and they are just great. A lot of fun to watch, even if you are not familiar with or don't like the show. So that's my little plug for Comic-Con, I guess you could say. But on to more serious matters. So this year, we've had at least one death, major death from drug addiction, if not more. That would be Prince. Now, I don't usually talk about music, but Prince stands out. But he's not the only person that died from a drug overdose. There's many actors and musicians here. Let me read a list of just a few over the years. So Philip Seymour Hoffman, heroin, cocaine, benzodiazepine, and amphetamine in his system when he was found dead. He also took a medication called Suboxone, which was supposed to help him stay off of the heroin. And I believe he overdosed on the heroin because he was taking Suboxone and it required more heroin for him to get high. That's my personal belief. That is not based on any evidence besides the fact that there was Suboxone on his person at the time. Harris Whittles, not somebody who may, you know, not a name that you may recognize right off the bat. He's the producer of the show Parks and Recreation. He died of a heroin overdose. I don't know if it was this year or late last year, but he actually did a podcast where he talked about his heroin addiction about a month before he died. And it's a really, interesting story to listen to. Unfortunately, the host on that show, on that podcast, just tried to make a joke out of it, and it didn't. Unfortunately, it really detracted from the power of what Mr. Whittles had to say. I listened to the whole thing, though, and I really felt that it was an accurate portrayal. It was, because it was his own story of addiction. Corey Monteith, which was an actor in Glee, he died of heroin and alcohol. Heath Ledger, I did not know that Heath Ledger had oxycodone in his system. That is a high, very, very powerful form of an opiate. It's a very strong opiate, very much preferred by addicts. Vicodin with the oxy, that's another opiate, very famous one. Rush Limbaugh was addicted to Vicodin. Fortunately, he survived, or he's still surviving. Hopefully no relapses in his life. And to pile on more for poor Mr. Ledger, there's Xanax, Valium, and a few other drugs. So he was really, really loaded when he died, and that's just very sad. River Phoenix, probably the first time he ever used drugs, from what I understand, heroin and cocaine. Chris Farley, morphine and cocaine, just very similar, another opiate. Heroin and cocaine for John Belushi. Dana Plato from Different Strokes. She died of Lortab and Soma. Soma is a muscle relaxer. Lortab is just another brand name for Vicodin, hydrocodone. A little different than oxycodone. And then there's the musicians. Now, you know, musicians just have a bad rap when it comes to drug overdoses. That's just a fact. So there were only a few real big surprises on the list. Prince, to me, that was a surprise. He died of a fentanyl overdose. That's a very high-end painkiller, very high-end opiate, probably around the level of heroin. I'd say oxycodone is pretty close to heroin, too, in terms of strength and addictive properties. Vicodin is not nearly that powerful, but because of its widespread use, it is now under the same restrictions that oxycodone is. The government last year or the year before put it under a heavier restriction because it's so widely prescribed, and widely used and very available on the black market, so to speak. Okay, so Prince, fentanyl. Michael Jackson, of course, propofol. That's the first time I ever heard of that drug. But he also had Valium and Ativan in his system. Those are also benzodiazepines. Those are very strong depressants, especially when taken together. Throwing propofol on top of that, just the writing had to be on the wall for the poor guy, I'm sorry to say. And his doctor absolutely should have known better. Elvis, much to my surprise, Elvis Presley had codeine, which is a little bit less powerful than Vicodin. He had Valium, morphine, and Demerol. Morphine and Demerol are both way up there in the heroin league. And for him to have both of those and then codeine on top of it, he was a very, very far gone drug addict. He was way down the road of drug addiction, and that is very sad. Billie Holiday, she's a jazz singer, and I'm not super familiar with her work, but of course her name is just synonymous with jazz, practically. She died of both heroin and alcohol abuse. And in 1947, she was actually arrested for heroin possession. That is a long time ago in anyone's book. And boy, you know, heroin has just been around forever. John Entwistle. Now, this is one of the surprises I find on this list. I know he died of a heart attack. I'm a huge Who fan. And, I thought it just was his time, you know, but he died of a heart attack because he had overdone the cocaine that night. He took too much cocaine and it caused heart failure for him. So it is a drug related death, a drug caused death. I'm not sure if his death certificate lists it as a drug abuse, drug overdose, or just a heart attack. I'm not sure. Kurt Cobain died of suicide, obviously. Well, at his death, he had both heroin and Valium in his system. And I think it's fairly well known that he had been having trouble with drugs and he had attempted suicide previously. And I can tell you for sure that the heroin was torture for this guy and that his depressive episodes were absolutely exacerbated, if not directly caused by the heroin. He probably was prone to depression, and the heroin, while initially making him feel better, it just wipes you out afterwards and can send you into really deep depression, even to the point of suicide. So I would consider Kurt Cobain having died of drug-related suicide. And again, a very sad story. He was quite young. A few others. Dee Dee Ramone died of heroin. His brothers, actually, several of them have died of heart attacks, natural causes. So I was surprised to hear that this one was heroin. Sid Vicious, not a shocker that he went down on heroin. The shocker is that his mother sold it to him. So that makes it less of a shocker than that he died from it, even so, because, boy, it runs in the family. That's just a horrible story. Another very sad case was Whitney Houston, who drowned in a bathtub, but she had cocaine, Xanax, Flexeril, Benadryl, and alcohol in the room and in her system at the time. So it's not too hard to say that she probably fell asleep in the bath or stumbled into the bath and died that way. Bobby Brown, her daughter, died of alcohol, marijuana, and morphine in her system. Also died in the bathtub. A very sad, sad legacy for Miss Houston. So I'll be back and explain a little bit as to why I've got this list of drug-related deaths, and we'll talk about that when we come back.
Down by an old country church, I saw the drunkard stagger and lurch. And as he reached his mother's grave, I saw that drunkard kneel and pray.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand, or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Lord, have mercy on me.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, and I'm Mark Boubian, filling in for Bob, and I have an admission here. I am a drug addict. Just like many of the people that I just listed before the break, I am an opiate addict, and I also took a muscle relaxer known as Soma, which is actually why I put the Different Strokes girl on the list. I'm not really familiar with her life, but that was basically the same drug of choice that I abused for anywhere from 10 to almost 15 years of my life. I went through rehab about 3 years ago, and I also took Suboxone, the drug I mentioned about Philip Seymour Hoffman. That was a godsend for me. That got me away from the opiates, even though it itself is an opiate. Kind of hard to explain, but basically, if I took any opiate, it wouldn't have had any effect on me when I was taking the Suboxone, so there was really no reason for me to seek out the drug anymore. And it took me a long time. It took me almost 2 years to actually cycle off of the Suboxone, and I actually had about 2-3 months of withdrawal. I was out of work for 3 months after I stopped that, but that's a Suboxone use followed on about 15 years of on and off, and mostly on opiate abuse. So that was, I had a lot of payback there. So that's why I was out of commission for so long. And I don't attend Alcoholics Anonymous as much as I need to. I do attend. I've got a sponsor who's an amazing human being, a great Christian, and I have seen some wonderful things in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've seen God's hand directly at work there. And hopefully I'll get to talk a little bit about that later in the show. But part of my motivation for discussing this is Prince's death, of course. That was the most recent event, and it was very tragic. He was young and still very vital in the music industry, and he had a lot more to offer, I believe, and a lot of people believe that too. So it just is a really, really awful tragedy, and I can guarantee you that he was suffering when he died from firsthand experience. Drug addiction is not the fun party it is made out to be. I think pretty much every drug addict out there is suffering, and at the end of every AA meeting, basically, they have a moment of silence and a moment of prayer, in a sense, for the addicts that are still out there suffering. So there's that recognition that addicts suffer. And even though they are drinking, smoking, shooting up as an act of will, or so it seems, they are still suffering. And I think probably the majority of addicts, not all of them, sadly, but I think a lot of them really would rather not be addicts, but they just don't know what to do. It's a very powerful disease. Now, about 2 weeks ago, I heard a fairly prominent pastor on the radio. I listen to a lot of guys speak on the radio. I don't listen to him very much, so I just happened to tune him in because I was in between, I was driving somewhere. And he actually was talking about drug addiction. And so, of course, I'm a drug addict. I'm going to listen. I wanted to hear what he had to say. And you know, I was actually really, really disappointed and actually quite devastated in a personally devastated, and I turned it off. I turned him off. Now, I have gone back since and listened to the rest of that particular program because I didn't feel like just turning him off was giving him a fair shake. But I was so upset by what he said, and I know that I would not have been the only one if there were other addicts listening. I don't think what he said would have gone over well. And what he said was that, I'm quoting, I know the core... Of course, the proper verbiage today is, quote unquote, you have a disease. Well, you have a disease of alcoholism or of drug addiction. And Greg Laurie went on to say, I reject that concept, by the way. If alcoholism is a disease, it's the only disease bottled and sold, the only one without germ or virus as a cause, and the only disease that's spread by advertising. And he also said, I understand one can have a propensity for this sort of thing. I understand some people are weaker in this area than others. So there is a degree of sympathy. Now, he didn't say, I have a degree of sympathy. He said, there is a degree of sympathy somewhere out there in the ether. There's sympathy, you guys. Great. If you're an addict, just be aware. Sympathy's around. Now, I'm being very sarcastic. I apologize, but I was unhappy with that statement. It was, to me, it was actually very weak. He should have taken responsibility and said he has sympathy. Now, he did say that he has addiction in his family, which actually probably almost 100% of people in the United States are affected by addiction in some way or another, whether they know it or not. And that's an old, old statistic. And given the rounds I've done in AA, NA, and Al-Anon, because my parents were addicts, I know that the potential there is very high, that statistic is probably true. Now, I think what was even more problematic about the statement this pastor made is that he went on to say how insensitive the Bible is about this, because he was really railing on the idea that addiction is a disease, is called a disease. And he's going against this quote-unquote politically correct notion that it's a disease. Well, he says the Bible's just as insensitive as I'm being, basically. He said that the Bible calls an alcoholic a drunkard. Now, that's true. It does. Alcoholism, being a drunkard, that's a sin. I'm not going to deny that. There is a choice involved. There is a choice involved with drug addiction. But there's a point where addicts basically lose that choice, or it becomes so incredibly, insanely difficult to make a choice that it's almost impossible to make it. And after I went through rehab, I actually came to believe that it is absolutely a miracle that I stopped taking drugs, and that any addict ever stopped taking drugs. It is that powerful of a disease. And we'll be right back with the Bob Siegel Show.
The kids at school have parents that seem so cool. And though I don't want to hurt them, mine want me their way. I clean my room and my shoes, but my mother found a box of blues. And there doesn't seem much hope. They let me stay.
Suit, suit, white jacket with side vents 5 inches long.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's latest novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Suit, suit, white jacket with side vents 5 inches long.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Mark Booby, and filling in for Bob while he's out of town. And there's The Who with John Entwistle as their absolutely amazing bassist. Unfortunately, he died of the effects of cocaine. And my guess would be that he was abusing cocaine for a while because he was somewhat elderly, to put it rather bluntly, that he would be using cocaine at that age. I'm just really surprised that, you know, he had so much going for him. It's a surprise that this played a role in his death. And it is a tragedy. It's too bad. So in terms of calling alcoholism a disease, maybe we're just, you know, I'm getting upset about that. It's just a term in a sense. So what's the point of being upset? Well, the problem is I don't think this pastor was really understanding what he was saying. He didn't really know very well what he was talking about. Now, I can see that, you know, he had, you know, maybe I'm judging him unfairly by saying that. I should take a step back there. I honestly don't know what his motivation for saying that was, so let's just leave it at that. But I do have a response, and I can tell you about my reaction, why I had a reaction. I was unhappy, to say the least. And as I said, I turned off the radio and turned it back on. And his sermon was actually fine. I listened to the rest of it, and, you know, no problem. Still didn't like what he said about drug addiction even later in the sermon, but, you know, he had a good point. Anyway, let's go to my feeling. Now, I was definitely devastated to hear this, because here's a Christian who's got a responsibility to a wide audience, whether they are Christians or not. There are addicts out there. There are addicts probably in his church. There are addicts everywhere. That's just the way it is. They're not only the people on the street. I went to work every day on drugs for 15 years. So that shows you where addicts can be, at the very least. Now, when alcoholism was named a disease, it changed the way it was perceived. Now, one of the pastor's points was that you're calling it a disease, not calling it a sin. Okay, now, actually, that is a good point. Calling it a disease and not calling it a sin, not naming it for what it is. And I'm all for that idea. I don't want to water down a sin and make it sound like it's just okay. All right. And being an addict is a sin, because you're harming yourself and because you're harming other people. That's why it's a sin. But, you know, it's not, we shouldn't be judging it and saying, oh, we're replacing terms, because addicts have a very, very, very hard time giving it up. Choice was really, really a big part of the initial decision, but as time progresses, it becomes less and less of a possibility, as I said. Now, calling alcoholism, calling drug addiction a disease means that there's a treatment, because pretty much every disease that we deal with in modern times, whether or not it's true, we have the perception that we can treat this disease if we can name it, if we can find the virus, whatever. Now, maybe we can't cure it, but we can help. We can make life better. We can improve things. And alcoholism, it's a disease that you never get over. I am a drug addict. I don't say it in the past tense. I have not used an opiate on purpose for 4 years. I have not used an opiate for pleasure for three years, I guess, is when I went through rehab. Okay? But I am a drug addict. So the fact that this change occurred, you know, this perceptive change that, oh, wait, as an addict, I have an outlet. I have a treatment. I'm not just a bad person. There's somewhere for me to go. The other issue was the way society viewed addiction. There was a huge stigma on drug addiction. There still is. Come on. I mean, what am I saying? It's not as bad as it used to be, but, you know, drug addicts are drug addicts. They're, you know, you see a drug addict in a movie, he's not a good guy. But I mean, come on. That's just the way society perceives him. Now, Psychology Today, actually, in an article about why we should not call addiction a disease, this article actually states, this is a quote, addicts were seen as different worse than normal folks. They were thought to be lacking in, they lacked ordinary discipline and morality. They were self-centered and uncaring, out for their own pleasure without regard for anyone else. And they just had some deficiency of character. Now, I have read this from people that were alcoholics, drug addicts in the 30s. This was absolutely an this is an accurate, absolutely factual description of alcoholism and drug addiction, how it was viewed by society over the year. When we changed the term to disease, that changed the way society perceived it. It meant that we can help these people. They are not just hopeless cases. They're not just going out on the street. They're not, you know, we're not getting rid of them. And the rise of AA was a big part of this. And now, again, choice being a factor, a disease, you don't have a choice. This is the one of the problems with looking at alcoholism or addiction as a disease. And even though this article in Psychology Today was saying don't use the term disease anymore, it was actually advocating for another clinical term, like disorder, for example. It's a disorder, not a disease. And that would be a more accurate description of what it is. And so that would still work. I'm fine with that kind of change, as long as we recognize that there are treatments. People need help. We can help them. They can get help. It's not hopeless. There are hopeless cases out there of any kind of sin, but you know, there is at least help. And to know that is an absolutely profound thing for any addict. It was for me. I actually used to fantasize about going to rehab as my drug addiction progressed. And I just thought, I can never do it. I can't get off work. I don't have the time. It's just too much work. But I ended up doing it in the end, and it saved my life. And we'll be back again with the Bob Siegel Show after this brief little break.
This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching of nationally famous speaker, Pastor Jim Garlow. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
All right, and welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Mark Boobian, filling in for Bob, talking about drug addiction and some of the things that you get to hear about it, even in today's society. Unfortunately, we view drug addiction still somewhat negatively, and some people just say the wrong thing. So I'm here to correct that a little bit, maybe. I don't know. So now, today, we do not really view drug addiction or alcoholism as any kind of moral failing. I mean, obviously, we're still going to call it a sin. It is called a sin in the Bible. Choice is involved. That's why it's hard to call it a disease. Even I have trouble naming it a disease. I'm still going to name it a disease. But, you know, you get caught up in this, oh, but it's a choice. Oh, but you're sick. Oh, but, you know, so it goes back and forth. That's how I tend to do it. And unfortunately, you know, that's the way a lot of people view it. And but a few things to say about choice and disease. Well, let's see now. Let's take a look at heart disease. Or how about diabetes? You know, I made a choice to start taking drugs. There are people that die of heart disease that made a choice not to stop eating fatty foods, even though their doctor said to. Now, you know, I'm not trying to be insensitive, but it's true. It's just the facts. And I'm not trying to say they're an addict or anything like that. It's just that there was a choice involved. They could have lived a healthier lifestyle. They chose not to. Same with diabetes, eating too much sugar, letting yourself get overweight. Those things are choices. Those, you know, and maybe there's other factors. For a lot of people, there probably are, but there is some choice involved in those cases. Now, and in terms of seeking treatment, this is where choice really becomes a much larger factor. I know three people who refused treatment for a disease and died. And all three of those were in the last 2 years. Now, this one is a friend of mine. His sister, she's a Christian Scientist, and they, as a group, do not believe in medical science. Seeking help for medical science, it should all be either natural or by the grace of God. And that's a nice perception, but it's not a realistic one. God in the Bible is realistic. He deals with real people. Unfortunately, real people make mistakes on how they perceive God. And I know God understands that. And I believe one of these mistaken perceptions is this notion that you don't seek medical help. You expect God to fix you. And I mean, you can't believe your way into making God do something. That's a problem right there. That's just the first red flag with that idea. But anyway, regardless, my friend's sister, she got skin cancer, completely treatable. That's actually runs in the family, even, and nobody else had died from it. But she didn't seek treatment, and eventually it caused her to die. And it was a choice she made. It was, in my opinion, it was the wrong choice. And just like I had a choice to make to go to drug rehab. Now, it was not an easy choice, I will tell you. And I bet for this woman to say, I will not seek treatment, I bet that wasn't an easy choice either. I don't want to downplay her suffering. I'm sure that that was a very, very difficult thing for her to do, even though she believed she was doing the right thing. Even in regular diseases, there still is choice. It's not exactly the same as drug addiction, but it's similar. There are parallels. So it's not necessarily fair to just say, not a disease, choice, and that's it. That's not the end of the sentence. That's not the way it goes. And as I've mentioned a few times, the choice becomes almost impossible to make. Let me just say, withdrawal is a nightmare. It's absolutely, it's torturous. I often took drugs just to avoid withdrawal, probably most of the time. And in the case of the Parks and Recreation producer, when he spoke of his drug addiction, he ended up leaving the studio in Hollywood and going down to the Skid Row in Los Angeles with all the drug addicts and bums and homeless and whatever to try and get some heroin so he could avoid going through withdrawal because he had lost his source of the prescription medication he was taking. So he went to absolutely the most insanely extreme measures that you could imagine. I mean, he got robbed, got the money back, got robbed again, got led around, and finally scored. I don't know how it happened in the end, because they thought he was a cop. Because what's this, you know, well-to-do white guy doing down here? But the whole time he was talking about it, I absolutely was with him. I understood. I said, wow, I would have done the same thing. I was that with him on it. And I kept thinking, boy, I hope you get the drug soon because you're in trouble. You're going to go through withdrawal. Now, I think probably one of the best ways for me to say it is that in Christianity, you know, we talk about this denying Christ. If we ever are faced with this, would we deny Christ? Would we deny being a Christian? Like the 11 people that were beheaded on the video in Africa, I don't know exactly where it was, but they were heroes because they absolutely, in the face of their own death, they did not deny Christ. An amazing, amazing decision to make. Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if I could do what they did, but if somebody said to me when I was an addict, either you deny Christ or you go through withdrawals, I would have had a very hard time not denying Christ. Addiction is that bad. It is so difficult. Once it gets its fingers into you and once things start rolling, it just gets harder and harder to quit the longer you do it. And you'll see drug addicts being very thin, very gaunt, very drawn out because the drug is the number one thing in their life. They lose everything. And this is absolutely common. They'll stop eating. They'll stop, you know, drinking. They'll stop seeking social interaction, anything. A lot of the stuff we do to survive will fall by the wayside and drugs will take its place because that's the effect drugs have on the brain. And drugs do profoundly affect the brain. I'm still healing from the drug addiction I went through. I have at least 2 years of healing after I stopped the Suboxone. That's how long it takes the brain to heal. And I can tell you that I still have issues that I struggle with because I spent so long with my addiction. Now, let me just tell you some of my personal experiences, what I did as an addict. I hurt my back just on a walk. Let me start with high school, okay? Just a little step back. I did drugs in high school. I smoked pot, you know, did cocaine, took other stuff, whatever. And I quit after high school and before I went to college. And I didn't have any desire to do drugs ever again. But because I did drugs in high school, the notion of drugs as kind of a cure or whatever became a valid notion. It opened me up to the validity of drugs. So as I was saying before, when I was on this walk, I hurt my back taking a bad step. It wasn't a bad injury, but it was back pain. And I knew that I could go get some codeine or Vicodin for it. No problem, because that's just what you did. And I actually kind of liked the idea, even though I was not an addict. Now, this was the first real decision I made about drugs. I didn't fall into addiction right away. I got dependent on the codeine, but then I quit after a couple of months. This is my memory of it, at least. I don't know if this is 100% accurate because my memory has been affected by my drug use, and I'm not kidding. Eventually, I fell completely into codeine and Vicodin addiction. When I could get it, I get oxycodone or anything, Percodan, Percocet, anything related, I would do that because those were good drugs. That's the stuff any opiate addict wants, because those are the best. And those are the most dangerous and deadly. And I'll be right back with the Bob Siegel Show after this break. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Cry, you don't want to try. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Cry, you don't want to try.
This is Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests.
somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area, and you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online, Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-401-2150. That's 619-401-2150 or fredfalduti.com.
What better review of a book than to check with the customers themselves? Here is a recent customer review of Bob Siegel's fantasy novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. Superior. As a middle school teacher, I am a prolific reader of juvenile fiction and an even tougher critic of the genre. With that said, I experienced sheer delight in reading the page-turner, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament by Bob Siegel. Mike, the sixth grade protagonist in the story, is a well-drawn character with all the weaknesses and strengths of a 12-year-old. Mike's e-ticket adventure engages the reader with his shenanigans of making his veggies disappear, cat talk, and creating a twin who doubles for him. Not only that, Bob Siegel skillfully weaves a subtle moral message with the metaphoric thread, which encourages a kid to be the best version of himself, all the while addressing the various angst of preteens. Finally, I was captivated to the last page, but disappointed when the Christmas ride of the magical ornament came to a satisfying conclusion. I can't wait for the sequel. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
What a drag it is getting old. Kids are different today. I hear every mother say, mother needs something.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Mark Rubian, and I am an addict. I'm talking about drug addiction. And giving a few details about my own desperate foray into such a terrible, terrible thing. And by God's grace, I'm not taking opiates anymore. So when I started taking the codeine, as I mentioned, I don't remember exactly how long or when I first got addicted, but I do know that I got addicted and stopped, addicted and stopped, addicted and stopped. I don't know, probably, 20 to 50 times without exaggeration. I'm talking about a 15-year period. And I could not go 1 month without going back on the drugs. Literally, like almost to the day a month, I would have such insane cravings, I would just give in. Now, little did I know that there's a thing called post-acute withdrawal. You hear about withdrawal, the acute withdrawal, that's the stuff you suffer, the shakes, the sweating, all that stuff that you see in the movies, that is real, and you get that, and then you kind of recover from that, and then for the next 2 years, you get bouts of post-acute withdrawal, cravings, and sometimes even the sweats and the shakes and mood swings and things like that. It's just an absolute, it's a terrible recovery process. It just is. It's rough. And I'm still glad that I'm progressing through it. Thank God. I'm not perfect at it by any means, but I am really glad that I'm trying. So the thing about when you quit and go back on withdrawal and go back on, withdrawals get worse and worse. Well, guess what? The worse withdrawal gets, the worse you want to do them. So eventually it became, I'm not quitting. And I just stayed on the drugs. At a certain point, I decided to just not stop. I gave up on trying. And I broke my back surfing a couple years before rehab. And it was because I was actually on drugs at the time. I was impaired and I wasn't 100% at my senses. And the waves were like 2 foot, okay? So, you know, saying I'm impaired is almost an excuse at this point because it was such a small day and such a dumb thing to have happen. But I broke my back, and I knew I was going to get better drugs. So I wasn't entirely unhappy that I broke my back. I mean, it hurt really bad when I did it and before the ambulance got me. But they shot me with morphine immediately, and then, and it barely worked because I was such a high-end drug addict at that point. I was immune to it. But then after my, you know, emergency room stay, I had great stuff. And then that started me really on a roll. I started seeking out the high-end stuff, oxycodone and the morphine and whatever else, Demerol, anything I could get that was better than Vicodin. It just became so overwhelming. I decided I had to stop. I mean, and I got help from God. Initially, I was just going to go in and start a Suboxone program, not go through rehab. And it worked. I mean, and then every single door to rehab, that kind of rehab, shut in front of my face. And I was like, God, what are you doing? And finally, I just made an appointment with a real rehab center that did Suboxone, but then I'd have to stay for a month. And that's the one I chose to do. And I tell you, I planned it out so that I'd run out of the oxycodone the day I had to go into rehab, because it was withdraw in rehab or withdraw out of rehab. And at least in rehab, they'd have medicine to help me. So I planned it that way. And I'll tell you, I still did not want to go to rehab the day I woke up. I'd been anticipating it for weeks, wanting it for weeks. But that morning, I didn't want to go to rehab. And I knew I'd have to face withdrawal. I mean, is that insane or what? But that's how hard the choice is to quit. That's why I say it is absolutely a miracle that anyone can quit. And this is only the first step to quitting. I mean, it gets much worse because you've got to stay clean. And again, God's grace is on anybody that has quit. And I mean that. I mean that sincerely. So I believe that God led me into the rehab I went through. My wife was absolutely a great support in getting me there. I wouldn't have gone without her. And God got me through it. And I see God every time I go to AA. Another gripe I have with some churches is that they see AA as this weird culty thing that's not Christian. Well, tough cookies, churches, it is totally Christian. They may not use the Jesus terminology that you want them to use, but it's because they want people to get healed that won't if it was purely a Christian organization. That was the motivation for the founder of AA to change the terminology from about specifically naming Jesus to using the terms higher power and a power greater than ourselves. Interestingly enough, the Oxford group that AA formed out of also used one or two of those terms in a context that actually pointed to Christ. So even though they're substitute terms, they are actually Christianized, so to speak, terms that point to God. Now, when I say I've seen God at work, I mean, I've seen people talking about their higher power, helping them, their higher power, you know, at work in their lives, and they have good days when they trust their higher power. In their minds, they aren't talking about Christ. They aren't even talking about the God, the creator of the universe. They're talking about some higher power that is nebulous to them, I know. But I believe God is honoring that because it is helping them. And let's look at it from the perspective of John 3:16. If you think, even if somebody is not a Christian, God doesn't want that person to suffer. And God is going to help them any way he can that doesn't interfere with their free will. And I firmly believe that God is at work in the lives of these people that are going to AA and working on seeking their higher power and trying to get off and stay off the drugs. God is at work. And thank God that we have AA, because it is a Christian organization. I don't have time to read them, unfortunately, but if you look at the 12 steps, read them from a Christian perspective, substitute the word God for higher power, which is the way it originally was. When you're done, if you do the 12 steps, that is becoming a Christian. God is at work in AA. AA is truly a gift from God in my sense, my experience. And again, I thank God that I've had the chance to go through it. So I guess I'm going to wrap up the Bob Siegel Show with that notion, with that idea in mind. Thank God for AA. This is the Bob Siegel Show, and I'm Mark Boobie, and thanks for listening.